It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the Wisconsin Dugout Canoe Survey Project and the growing number of hollowed-out canoes inventoried through this effort. Carved from a single tree trunk, they appear in private collections. They rest at the bottom of lakes. And centuries-old dugout canoes, they were vital resources in food gathering and transportation for Native Americans. Call in with a question. You can share thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Cecil Schrader is an anthropology professor at UW-Madison whose lab hosts this survey project. Cecil, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's a real pleasure to be here.
And Tamara Thompson here as well, a maritime archaeologist at the State Historic Preservation Office of the Wisconsin Historical Society. Tamara, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, Tamara, let's start with you. In less than 6 years, the survey project has documented 90 of these historical vessels. Where are they being found?
So we had an intern from University of Wisconsin-Madison come to our office and ask if he could do a project that eventually rolled into a senior thesis for him. His name is Ryan Smozzel. And he started doing the research and looking in collections for dugout canoes to complete a comparative analysis. And when he finished his work, we started with 11 and we knew where there were 34. He had visited 26, and Cecil and I decided, well, we'll help finish his project and this could result in some papers for him. But then COVID struck and we ended up doing a little bit more archival research, and we've uncovered more than 90 canoes that are in collections, private collections, those in historical society, and even those that are still on the bottom of lakes across Wisconsin.
Wow. Did you anticipate that it would be this number? I mean, why are these canoes, why do they seem to be so prolific?
Well, they were a very common use of the trees in our landscape, and they very easily could be crafted by those that knew how to do them, and they've been made by Native peoples all along.
Cecil, we know, as Tamara says there, we know the waterways have been essential. They've been sacred to Native cultures for fishing, for gathering rice. How instrumental are these dugout canoes in both practical terms, but also in the cultural aspect?
The dugout canoes would have been really essential just for basic transportation in our state, which has so many lakes and so many waterways. But they were used for a variety of purposes. They were used for fishing, for wild ricing, as was mentioned, for sport, for all different kinds of things. And so they were pretty central, I think, culturally to these societies that lived in the ancient Native peoples in Wisconsin lived around the lakes and along the rivers of the state.
And I understand you've found dugout canoes displayed on the wall of a small town hardware store, in the rafters of a barn. You know, what makes people want to preserve these canoes?
They're an object that is so easy to recognize once you pull it out of the water. And so many people across this state kayak and canoe that when they see an ancient one, it just is, I think it's a really special touchstone for them that connects the past with the present. Mm-hmm. And so they want to do something to help preserve it.
We're talking about the Wisconsin Dugout Canoe Survey Project underway with UW-Madison anthropology professor Cecil Schrader and state maritime archaeologist Tamara Thompson with us. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tamara, so these dugout canoes ranging in length from 14 feet to 34 feet, made from a variety of tree species. What are you learning about how these canoes were put together?
Oh, they're, you know, everyone thinks that they've seen one dugout canoe, and they've seen them all, but they're all so very different. So stylistically, as you said, in length, but also they evolved over time. And that's one of the things that we'll be doing when in this analysis. We've collected a small wood sample from each one of the canoes that we've visited, and we're looking for wood type. We're having the wood analyzed right now at the Forest Products Research Laboratory. And then very shortly, we'll be sending in all of the samples to be radiocarbon dated. So we'll have this picture of how these canoes were constructed and made over this vast expanse of time.
Can you go further there on the carbon testing process and what that might help you determine in with the age and other characteristics?
Sure. So we've taken a very, very small sample of wood. It's probably the size of your small fingernail. And from that sample, we're splitting them in half. One half again goes to Forest Products Research Laboratory for the wood type analysis. They're looking at the cellular structure of the wood, and they're able to break it down to maybe not the species level, but the genus level of the trees. So we'll know what trees were selected and harvested, or selected and grown to be harvested for dugout canoes. And then for the radiocarbon dating, those CISL has just received a grant funding from the University of Wisconsin to be able to send those samples off for analysis. And they will be able to put a range of time on each one of those watercraft. So right now, in the collections across the state, only 16 of those 90 dugout canoes have been radiocarbon dated. So we know a date range that tree had been harvested. But we're hoping to fill in the rest of the gaps and really be able to look at them not only across time, but across space, across our state.
Cecil, why is it important to get that approximation of the age of the tree?
Of reasons that that's really important. One is that it further demonstrates the antiquity of these watercraft in native cultures. A second one is that over the past 10,000 years, the climate changed and that affected vegetation in different parts of the state. And so if we have a wood type and a radiocarbon date, it can help us better understand why a particular wood species was chosen for making the dugout. For example, we have some dugouts that were made out of elm, which is a wood that is very difficult to work. It has an interlocking grain, and so it's almost impossible to split the log. And the dugouts, excuse me, the dugouts that we have that were made out of elm date to a time period around 3,000 years ago, when the climate in this region was a little bit warmer, and that affected the the ways in which oak trees and other species in southern Wisconsin were growing, and made elm a really suitable choice for people to make, because no matter what kind of environment the elm is growing in, it will grow a long straight trunk. Whereas oak trees, if they're growing in a warmer climate, are more likely to spread out and start branching fairly low to the ground, making them not a very well-suited trunk for making a dugout canoe.
Cecil Schrader with us, professor of anthropology specializing in archaeology at UW-Madison. Tamara Thompson is a maritime archaeologist in the State Historic Preservation Office, and together they run the Wisconsin Dugout Canoe Survey Project. And there's room for your questions and comments. Call 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Dozens of hollowed out canoes, some of that are centuries old, are being inventoried through the Wisconsin Dugout Canoe Survey Project. We explore discoveries in these vessels and the tree species that Native Americans used to craft them. And you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The project is run by the State Historic Preservation Office, maritime archaeologist Tamara Thompson, and UW-Madison anthropologist Cecil Schrader. Let's take a call now. Bill in Madison. Bill, hi. You're a canoeist.
Hi. Yes, I am. I'm an avid canoeist and user of the lakes in Madison, and I really enjoyed doing that. And I was curious about the dugouts versus the more later model birch bark type canoes that the Native Americans used. And I was just curious if they have any idea how the two perform, pros and cons. And also, I'd like to thank the two researchers there. They do excellent work, and I've been following that. Greatly appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you, Bill, for the call. Tamara, go ahead.
So we believe that the dugout canoes were probably for a particular lake or body of water. They would have been difficult to portage. And so as populations moved around, as the resources moved, the canoes may have been left or cached in a particular lake, and then they would come back and use them season after season. For the birch barks, they were much more fragile. So we see reports of dugout canoe, or sorry, birch bark canoes having to be patched and repaired as they were being used for travel. So we believe that there were different uses for each type of canoe.
So archaeologists think that indigenous people purposely submerged dugout canoes as a way to preserve them. And Cecil, can you explain a bit further there? Why did they want to preserve them that way?
The Native peoples in Wisconsin were pretty nomadic, at least on a seasonal basis. And so given the weight of a dugout and the how it would be difficult to portage, it was often easier to just leave them at a spring, summer, fall settlement. And if they were left behind over the winter and they were left on surface, then they would get waterlogged. When the temperatures dropped, they would freeze and they would be more likely to crack. And so submerging them in the lake and keeping them wet was a really excellent way of preserving them as dugout canoes.
I've heard the terms, Tamara, like seasoned or curing the canoes in that manner.
Yeah, I think it may have been part of the original production process, and then it just further was a further use as they were a further way of treating them as they were used to help extend their lifespan.
Was that a common practice, Tamara, to make them that way? There was, I think, some oiling done and then submerging them?
Yes. So they, when the canoes are constructed, they're burned. The interior of the canoe is burned out and scraped with, in the earlier canoes, scraped with shells or in later ones with stone tools. And then in the burning process, it was usually an animal fat that could have been used to keep the burn in a certain area in combination with water in some of the other areas to prevent the burn from going. So as they cached the canoes, a lot of times they would cover them with the sediment of the bottom, the oozy bottom, clays and things like that would settle down into the cracks of the wood. And in a rocky bottom, sometimes larger rocks were placed inside the canoe to keep it stationary over the winter. And the place that they would cache them would be in about waist deep water so that they could easily be retrieved, but would be below where the ice sheet would come in that could damage them.
Oh, wow. That's really remarkable. And then they could find them again easily in the spring, or hopefully easily to retrieve them.
Hopefully. that was the plan. So is to put them somewhere that it would be a common place for them to come back to. So some sort of feature on the landscape that would indicate where to look.
Cecil, how have historical societies and tribal preservation officers assisted in this survey project?
They've been remarkable partners in this project. We wouldn't have been able to do it without their support and interest. Some of the tribal partners have even informed us about dugout canoes in locations that we had no idea there were. For example, Dave Greeno of the Menominee told us that there was a Menominee dugout at the Smithsonian Institution in DC. And so Tamara and I drove out there in January to document that dugout. The local historical societies have been really open and welcoming to us coming in and documenting their dugouts. And everybody that we've worked with has been kind enough to allow us to take these small wood samples so that we can extend our analyses in some additional directions.
Talking with UW-Madison anthropology professor Cecil Schrader there and state maritime archaeologist Tamara Thompson as we explore the latest on the Wisconsin Dugout Canoe Survey Project. You can join in. Questions and comments are welcome. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tamara, some of these canoes have holes that look like space for possibly supporting masts. Could these canoes have been sailboats as well?
Yes, absolutely. We're also we're finding a number of holes that are through the prow. Those may have been used for putting a lifting stick to carry them out of the water or drag them along a shoreline. And then we find these mysterious holes. Sometimes they will be up on the bow area, and sometimes they would be semi-sunk into the floor of the boat. And these could have been to support a mast, or they could have been used for night fishing. There's still some mystery that we're trying to solve with some of these features that we're finding.
I would imagine you're documenting and trying to find patterns among the boats and of their characteristics.
Yes, we are. Hopefully with this, with the radiocarbon dating, we'll be able to look at those features on some sort of constructive timeline. But we also find that some of the later canoes, the ones that are a little more modern, but still crafted by Native Americans, have what are called thwarts across the bottom. So they're either to add support to the floor of the vessel to prevent it from coming in or curling in, or they may have been to compartmentalize fish or rice that they would have been collecting in the boat. Or we even find that from some of the artwork that we've looked at, they could have been for standing and purchasing against for really digging a paddle in to move you across the lake.
Possibilities there. And Cecil, you're using a GoPro camera and a phone. You're creating 3D images of some of the dugout canoes and posted them online for people to look at. Why create these images?
When we started the project, it was in part because Ryan Smozzle, the student intern that was working on it, was interested in learning more about 3D imaging. But we also wanted to do it because, as Tamara mentioned earlier, each dugout is unique and different. And most institutions or collections have just a single dugout, and people tend to think when they see that dugout, that's what all dugouts look like. So this is a way of making the variation in dugout form and style widely accessible to more people.
We have just a few seconds left, Tamara, but is there an end in sight? When will the survey project conclude?
We always think that there's an end in sight, and then we do a show like this and
more
will send
surface
us an email. Well, I don't know. It would be nice to have a nice round number like 100, but people are going to have to search their basements and attics and give us a call.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tamara Thompson, maritime archaeologist with the State Historic Preservation Office at the Wisconsin Historical Society. And Cecil Schrader, UW-Madison anthropology professor specializing in archaeology, lab hosting the Wisconsin Dugout Canoe Survey Project. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.